the 193rd episode of The Week with Roger, a conversation between analysts about all things telecom, media, and technology from Recon Analytics. I'm Don Kellogg, and with me as always is Roger Entner. How you doing, Roger?
Hey, I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. So, Roger, this week we're joined by a friend and colleague here at Recon, Mitch Klassen. Mitch recently attended a Smart Factory analyst event, and he's here to tell us about it. Mitch, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me. So we went to Ericsson's 5G Smart Factory this last week, and there's a lot of different topics that were covered, from Open RAN, APIs, Build America, Buy America, and their acquisition of Vonage and Cradlepoint. One of the things I really saw was really cool about this was we got to actually go through the factory and do a tour of it. And it is definitely a testament to what you can do with a 5G smart factory. It's not just like, oh, well, everything's connected, but their ability to have like flexibility and moving things around and not being stuck in the same building path or anything like that.
So what you're saying basically is that like the factory floor is modular, right? And they use 5G to be able to connect all the machines. And so you can move them around. Like say you've got some new piece of equipment you're manufacturing, you need a different kind of floor configuration. This would facilitate that, correct?
Yeah. So instead of running on Wi-Fi or connected cables on Ethernet, it's all off of 5G millimeter wave, and they're moving over to C-band. So they're able to have AMRs moving materials and equipment around as needed, fix the efficiencies, and drive more efficiency through the overall process. Because all the data is saved in-house and analyzed to find where there's inefficiencies and change it. So if they realize, oh, well, this path is too long or this AMR is having to go around this other device, they can move all the machinery around and actually be able to increase the efficiencies within the plant as needed moving forward. So it's not stuck in the same static pattern as they originally set up. They can change it for different products that they're building for that day or for that month, and then keep changing and creating those more efficient paths and decreasing the overall production time.
And when you say it's a 5G factory, it's using 5G, but they're actually building 5G equipment.
Yes.
At the factory, right? I didn't realize this until we talked about this. When I thought 5G factory, I thought, okay, well, it's a factory that's, you know, leveraging the latest 5G technologies to manufacture something, but they're actually manufacturing 5G equipment. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so this factory is in Lewisville, Texas, and it builds almost all of the massive MIMO boards for Ericsson that are used in the U.S., which are the 5G radio antennas that you see out in the field. It's their largest plant in the U.S. and puts out the most. They also use that same technology within the plant, and it's definitely a testament to what you can actually do with the 5G smart factories across all other industries also.
Got it. I know you mentioned American made, but this is, you know, kind of an example of part of the efforts to bring high-tech manufacturing back to the U.S. Can you say a little bit more about that in terms of what they're doing in that realm?
Yeah. So the U.S. government has a push for Build America, Buy America, bring a lot of that technology and manufacturing back to the U.S. It's definitely a way to show what we can do in the U.S. and bring more of that manufacturing, especially like high-tech manufacturing, back into the U.S. versus overseas. And that's definitely a push the country as a whole and the economy is kind of pushing towards to bring some more of that back. And this is something that they're definitely touting and showing that we can do this in the U.S. and still run these plants 24/7.
It's terrific.
Yeah. Well, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, right? Ericsson is showing here, they're walking the walk, not just talking the talk.
So Roger, we had some other news this week I know we wanted to cover. I believe that we've got some price action happening on the wireless side, this time from T-Mobile. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, T-Mobile hinted it in their earnings call and followed through this week. They did what AT&T and Verizon did beforehand, and are raising prices on legacy plans between $2 and $5. You know, I've had friends in the industry reached out and they're like, oh, will this drive churn up and all of these things? And I'm like, it didn't drive churn up at Verizon. It didn't drive churn up at AT&T in a noticeable way. And nor do I think it will increase churn at T-Mobile. Even with the $2 to $5 price increase, they should be, and with the legacy plans, still be lower than the alternatives. And customers who don't like it can go to a new plan, or in most cases will probably accept the price increase and keep going. I think a lot of people don't even realize that when it just goes up $2 to $5, we're in an inflationary period, and you know that's what happens.
Yeah, I mean, the cost of labor has gone up, the cost of electricity, which I, you know, you always say that wireless networks are fundamentally about turning electricity into cash, right?
Yeah.
Costs have gone up. There's been a big push in the industry to more and more premium plans, which I think is, you know, honestly caused some folks to sit back on the sidelines and stick with their legacy plans. I know I'm one of those folks. I mean, this is kind of the one-two punch, right? Roll out more expensive premium plans, and then over time, some of those legacy plans, you move up the ladder a little bit as well, although typically not in as great of an increment, right?
I was doing the same thing because my legacy plan had a streaming service with it, but then I think it increased prices twice, and then it became cheaper to go to the new plans and do the streaming separately than to stay at that. And so I switched around.
One of the things folks don't realize is how many plans are out there and how many people are on different plans, right? I know when we used to do work looking at bill panel data, there are people on plans from 10 years ago, 10, 15 years ago in some cases. It's difficult for the providers to keep track of all that. And the danger of somebody being on an old device or on an old plan is that those may not always stack up favorably to other options in market, right? And so it's in the best interest of the providers to get everybody on kind of the current plans, both from an MRC perspective, but also from just kind of a care perspective. It's hard to train your care staff to deal with 150 different plans.
Well, if it would be only 150 different plans, the average carrier has like more than 1,000 plans active. And Don, you remember we worked with a small rural telco with less than 100,000 subscribers, and they had what? 250 price plans active?
Yeah. And there were some price plans that literally only had two or three people on it.
Yeah. But it had to be there. And we helped them consolidate it for exactly all the reasons that we talked about. Better for everybody than to have a price plan of one. But that's what happens.
So, I mean, I think it'll be interesting. I agree with you. I don't necessarily think that this one price action is going to cause major challenges for T-Mobile, right? As you say, it's the same thing that both AT&T and Verizon have done multiple times over the last couple of years. I do think that the upward march of postpaid price points is creating a little bit of a vacuum on the low end in terms of folks exploring other cheaper options, right?
Completely agree with it. And talking about cheaper options, the two cable companies, or three with Cox, are offering some of the lowest services for their customers. They just rolled out a bounty of up to $500 per line, up to five lines, basically up to $2,500 to pay off handset contracts for people to switch to them. Charter is very steadfast that we are not subsidizing handsets, but in a way they are, right?
Well, they're subsidizing other people's handsets, right?
Exactly. You know, we're subsidizing the handset that you bought from the other carrier and still have a balance. Just come over, right? It's an interesting departure from what the nationwide operators are doing with best deals for existing and new customers. Here, only the new customers get the best deals.
Well, I mean, there's other action happening too, right? So Metro by T-Mobile, right, is offering free phones again to folks that come over.
Yeah, but the new entry-level plan was the mid-level plan before that, right?
Right.
There was a lot of hype around the Metro and Carrier move, and it was basically, yeah, we're retiring the $40 plan, and in exchange, you know, the $55 plan is now the new entry-level, but you get device incentives around it. It's this march upwards, right? And there's a vacuum then on the bottom. And I think our friends at Mint, who according to T-Mobile have outperformed all of their business plans during the time of between the announcement of the merger and the consummation. But it should also make people like our friend Peter Adderton at MobileX very happy. You know, it makes their value proposition stronger and stronger. And same thing with cable, because not everybody has the money for premium plans. Not everybody's premium.
Well, I think it speaks to kind of a bigger issue too, in that, as we saw in Q1, net adds are starting to kind of wind down a little bit. Post-pandemic, there was, you know, a big bump because of ACP, and the industry has been outgrowing. And we talked about this in the episode we had with Jonathan Chaplin. The industry has been outgrowing population growth for quite some time, despite high levels of saturation. So the knives are coming out from a promotional perspective across the industry, right? Because a net add is going to become harder and harder to come by.
And ACP has been discontinued for the time being, right? And everybody is scrambling on what to do and how to fill that gap. You know, we all listened to the JP Morgan investor conference, and the different wireless operators and broadband operators were there. Comcast, Charter, Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, and basically everybody is talking about convergence, right? We want to have customers that are buying both mobile and home internet from us, because the value proposition, not only to the customer, but also to the carrier, is a lot better.
Right. I think there's a little bit of a chicken or the egg thing there too, right? It's one thing to have one product with a customer, right? You may or may not have a good relationship with that customer based on kind of what the service level delivered is, right? But I don't think unhappy customers go out and buy multiple product lines from you.
Yeah.
When you look at converged accounts, yes, you see that they have lower churn. You see the cost to acquire and support is lower and everything else. But those are inherently happy people, right? So does the converged relationship make them happy, or are they happy and then they go into the converged relationship?
Well, they're happy and then they go converge.
Well, right. I think convergence is incredibly important. But I think the underlying structure around that relationship is more about building happy customers that then want to converge with you.
Yeah. People don't sign up for, you know, the beatings will continue until morale improves, right?
Right, right, exactly. But we're going to be doing some more research on convergence here soon. So I'm sure we'll talk more about it.
All right, good.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. Roger, we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. Talk to you next week.